Welcome to A Play on Nerds.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Jarman.
Between us, we have more than 30 years of experience in the nerd arts.
Each week, we endeavor to bring the world of nerddom to all of you.
So push up your glasses and listen up, Internet.
This is A Play on Nerds.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 26 of A Play on Nerds. Thank you for coming back listening to us. I am Jarman.
I'm Steve, and we're here to bring you another week of just some great nerdy stuff. We're so excited.
And if I sound like I'm in an echo chamber, that is only because I'm in my new house, which is exciting. I'll eventually have this all treated up like a studio, but right now it just sounds like I'm in a giant echo chamber, so enjoy.
It sounds like you're at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, there you go.
I like
it. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? You practice.
It feels epic.
I'm in the echo chamber. Anyways, so what have you been up to this past week, Steve? I'm sure it's really exciting.
It has been. I'm always exciting. Okay, so this is just a test to how interesting my week was. So my wife and I have been watching through Game of Thrones, and there's going to be some spoilers right now, people, probably for the next minute or two.
Spoilers! Spoilers! Spoilers!
And I really just said that because I really want you to play that spoilers thing that makes my wife mad.
Of course I will.
Okay, good.
I'll play it all the time.
Spoilers!
Spoilers!
So we've been watching Game of Thrones, and this week we're at the end of season 3. And just everyone died. Like half the people we cared about died.
Oh, you got to the red wedding scene.
The red wedding. And then killing the wolf and what the...
So now you finally know what characters my girlfriend and I were playing at those conventions all those times.
I totally know now. It hurts my heart that I know that now.
Mm-hmm.
They would
stop us at conventions and be like...
I just have to put up with the slave rebellion and the dragons. That's all that's left that I like.
There's more. You get back on track again. They screwed us over with Ned in the beginning, the first season, and then now the Red Wedding. But they can't kill anyone else because there's no one left.
Vengeance is coming, I hope. I hope that's the new season.
Not winter, but vengeance.
Vengeance. That was heartbreaking, but some of the best TV I've watched in a long time.
That was the first time when I first watched that episode where I watched television and went like gasped when that happened. That's never actually happened to me before watching a television show.
There was the point where, they send out the bride and the groom and half the people leave. And then that guy goes and closes the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, no, no. Anna and I were like, no, 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 no. Oh, come on. But as soon as they shut those doors, I was like, shit's going down.
I'm surprised you got to watch that episode with no spoilers up to this point. That's surprising.
I have cared so little about Game of Thrones that like nothing. I have no spoilers because I have literally paid that little attention to it.
Well, now you know how awesome it is.
I know. I'm pleasantly surprised, and I'm glad I don't have to watch it as it's coming out, and I can just watch it in one big stream.
Oh, yeah. But just wait till you catch up and you'd be pissed off. To wait.
That's right. Just like all my other shows.
Exactly.
So what have you been up to this week, Jerm?
My week was incredibly boring and not nerdy. I've been finishing up moving, so I've been sleeping 2 hours a night still, and I think it's finally finished, mostly. So hopefully I'll get some sleep in the next few days. But that's what I've been doing. I'm very thankful for my family and my girlfriend who helped me move. Otherwise, I would have gone insane. So I was happy to sit down last night and watch a couple episodes of Dinosaurs, which we'll get into later
for our feature segment.
But it was a great relaxation for about an hour and a half just to sit down and watch some nice TV. So
that's
my past week. Really boring.
Well, good. Hopefully it was some good TV.
It was. It was awesome.
Oh, good. And so our main segment today is going to be about the show Dinosaurs from Jim Henson's mind. Mm-hmm. And the reason we're doing it this week is because yesterday, the day before recording, September 24th, was Jim Henson's birthday.
Woohoo!
Yeah. And Jim Henson is someone who has inspired me greatly. And just everything you read about him is just awesome.
And I might be a bit morbid, but how old was he when he passed away? Do you remember?
Too young.
Yeah, I didn't think he was that old.
Is the answer to that.
Yeah.
He got sick and waited too long to go into the hospital, and by the time he went, he was too far gone.
Jeez.
Some people blame it on the fact that he grew up in a Christian Science home where they don't really do doctors and stuff.
Or medications of any kind, yeah.
Yeah. But mind you, he wasn't really practicing that, and he was never really known as a religious man. So there's some doubt to that, too.
Gotcha.
But yeah, he died too young. We miss you, Jim. We want you back. Thanks for all the great people you left us.
Absolutely. And after watching this show, Dinosaurs, man, I really know the talent that he had and the whole crew and people he worked with had back in those days. So it's not really around anymore.
By the time that show came out, he had been dead for a few years.
Really?
Yeah. But it was the last thing that he was personally working on.
Oh, gotcha. That's like Gene Roddenberry in the beginnings of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the last thing he had his fingers on, but he didn't get to see it actually premiere.
Oh. But yeah, he came up with this idea for like a standard family sitcom, but it was going to be dinosaurs who are almost constantly on the edge of destroying themselves. That is literally like the whole idea. And they wouldn't do it. They didn't think there'd be an audience for it. And then The Simpsons became popular.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly that format blew up.
There's a lot of similarities there. I guess we can wait till the feature to talk about
that. Oh, shit. That's right. We're talking too much about this.
We love it so much. So we couldn't help ourselves.
Jim Manson's birthday, September 24th. So that's why we're doing the special episode. Mm-hmm. So, Jarman, what do you bring us from the realm of nerdy news?
I found this piece of news specifically to piss off Steven.
I like it already. I'm so excited.
So, according to BigfootEvidence.blogspot.com,
all right.
Which actually is a really well-known Bigfoot website. It's been around for a long time. Blogspot. That's pretty
old. Like being the world's tallest midget. I get it. Come on.
Shut up. So, researcher M.K. Davis, who's also a very prominent cryptozoologist, researcher kind of person, he's very focused on Bigfoot throughout his career, but he also has been focused on the Patterson-Gimlin footage, which we've talked about previously on the show, which is the most famous Bigfoot footage. If you didn't listen to that show, it's basically the one that you would see the most frequently touted as...
It's a big, big, blurry Ewok walking through the forest.
Well, lots of things that this video was the most non-blurry video of Bigfoot that was ever taken. Everything else
still
since
still blurry.
Not, but anyways, they've been able to... They've taken a few frames, and they each frame by frame been clearing them up and using modern technology to take this old film and actually clear it up and make it, you know, presentable. Okay. And with this most recent frame that they were able to really clear up, they are able to see the individual toes on the foot of the Bigfoot the alleged Bigfoot that's walking in the video. And the detail on each individual toe they thought was just so incredible that anyone would put that much attention into a costume, if this was a costume in the 1960s when this video was made, would be pretty incredible and beyond most of the standards of costumes in that time. So it's basically more evidence towards this could be a real creature in this video, which I think is awesome.
Now, Steve? No. Once again, I believe that some sort of Bigfoot thing does exist somewhere. I just don't believe it's the guy in the monkey suit in that film. That's what I maintained last time, too. That was my final word.
I didn't remember that you said you actually believe there is something.
I believe there could be, because a species that versatile would be the most able to adapt to increasingly reduced land and would be smart to hide.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're talking about something that would be, you know, not that far below our intelligence level, realistically, if it is what we think it is.
Yeah, that's what they're more thinking, that it's more closer to humans, and it's actually able to communicate with other Bigfoot people, big feet. But
but no, I just don't think it's the guy in the monkey costume in that video.
I'm even more convinced because of this more recent discovery by M.K. Davis. It's like the toes on this individual, on this costume. It's like, why would they even bother putting those kind of individual toes?
Well, no. You say, why would they bother? Think of it this way. The guys who made this video, if it is a fake, they wanted it to be good enough to make everyone believe. And that is why they would put that much detail.
And it has female breasts, too, which is crazy.
Yeah, some big old titties.
I can always tell when Stephen's wife is sitting behind him when he's recording, because he'll say more offensive things.
I do it just to watch her shake her head.
Yep, test her boundaries.
And she just gave me the finger. Excellent. Good episode, everyone. Good episode. Beautiful.
That's when you know it's a good episode. Pissing off the wife time. So anyways, check it out,
okay,
folks,
sure.
At bigfootevidence.blogspot.com. It's intriguing, at the very least. So check it out.
And also check out Godzilla Lives.
That's right.
All hail Lord Godzilla.
He could be real.
Could be real.
All right. Well, what's your news this week?
So my news, I'm going to call the home wreckers. And so there is, so normally I hate spiders, but this is very interesting. The Avondale spiders, which are a social spider, most notable for being the spiders used in arachnophobia. Females are one large female, and they have a communal nest where they raise multiple generations of young. And so there's young, and the young take a year to develop and go out on their own. And so she has multiple generations, so older spiders, really tiny baby spiders, and they actually share food and stuff. It's like the only case of it in nature. So they have these nests. And in parts of the world, these spiders overlap with bulldog ants, which are the meanest son of bitch ants you ever heard of.
Really big ones, right?
Huge. Toxic bite. They've killed 3 people. You know, not a whole lot of bugs can say that. And
not a whole bugs can say anything.
That's true. Hey, bugs have rights too, people.
Bulldog ants also have vocal cords, folks.
It's true. I hear their tiny cries. But yeah, these nests can consist of up to 1,400 individuals for the bulldog ants. So in places where they overlap, they realize that these spiders' houses were being invaded by bulldog ants and flushing them out. And then after the bulldog ants did that, not only did they kill a ton of the young and in some cases killed the mother spider, then they spend all day bringing in rocks and twigs and shit into the nest.
Why?
And they fill it up with debris and they wreck the joint and then they leave so that the spiders can't move back in. It's just
kicking somebody out of their house, then peeing all over it so they can't go back into it.
Yeah, and they're shitting everywhere. But yeah, so I just think this is just one of the greatest examples of assholes in nature that I've heard of in a long time.
It's true. It's like completely vindictive and not furthering their species at all. It's just they want to be assholes. Yeah.
But yeah, one thing I thought was cool, though, was that in some cases, the spiders win. Not often, but in 2 of the trial cases that they did out of 132, mind you, the mother spider and the larger, more senior spiders were able to kill off all the ants.
I was going to say, the ones that were in arachnophobia, those are big spiders.
Up to 5 inches, up the size of your hand. Now, mind you, most of that's legs, but the size of your hand.
I'll never forget that we had a friend, Steve will know who I'm talking about, whose girlfriend was morbidly terrified of spiders. And we were playing an online, this is nerdy, we were playing an online campaign of Dungeons & Dragons, and we just mentioned the word spiders, and she, all we heard was a clack because we dropped.
It wasn't even the word spiders, it was the word arachnids.
That's right. But all we heard was her headphones falling to the table as she ran away from the computer.
All I remember was, it's the word spiders I need to avoid, right? And he said, yes. So I said, so if I say arachnids, that's going to be okay. And he said, yes.
Apparently not.
And apparently I said it, not. And she left, and he was like, dude, you did that on purpose. I was like, come on. Come on.
I don't know how that works. I don't have anything I'm that scared of that I can't hear the word.
I can't even imagine.
I would hate that. That'd be so sad to live your life that way, but it's unfortunate. But my ex-girlfriend, she was terrified of buttons. She couldn't say the word buttons. It would make her creeked out and she would feel
sick.
Are
we talking about buttons on a shirt or buttons on a device or?
Almost all of them, but mostly it was the worst ones were the ones with the four holes in them. Those were the worst to her.
How did she wear clothes?
She just wore clothes that didn't have buttons on them. And that's the weird thing too, is that apparently it's a not so uncommon disorder to be terrified of buttons. And Steve Jobs had that same exact phobia.
And that's phobia why we're turtlenecks.
That's right. And he's documented of having a phobia of buttons. So it's
he was
weird.
He was a weird dude.
Yeah, and she was a weird chick too.
Did some crazy good stuff, but you were a weird dude.
Exactly. Very eccentric personalities, I guess. But I don't have any phobias like that. I don't like spiders. They're gross, but I don't.
Oh, no. I've gotten much better. When I was a kid,
cockroaches are what gets me. I can't deal with them. Ugh.
All bugs are awful. Let's just agree on that.
I think we can agree on that. I wish they were all gone. I wish the ecosystem could do without them. That'd be great.
True. Agreed.
All right, folks. So if you are not a fan of dinosaurs or maybe you have a phobia of dinosaurs, we don't know. You might want to tune out now.
Well, if you have a phobia of dinosaurs, you've already gone. We've said
that's
it like
true. That's true.
Two dozen times by now.
Pretty much the rest of the show until trailer reviews is going to be about dinosaurs in one form or another. Real dinosaurs and the show Dinosaurs, which is,
dinosaurs in all forms are awesome.
It's true.
Like even from when I was a kid, I just remember just dinosaurs were the greatest.
And I don't think as adults we think about how freaking awesome it is that these gigantic lizard creatures were roaming the earth at one point.
Yeah, like 600 million. And that's the other thing. Think of that time span, 600 million years.
Oh, they were around for that long? Yeah.
I am 28. like, think of that, people.
And they were around 65 million years ago. They haven't been around for that long. Crazy. So, first up, what I'm going to do is I'm going to quiz Steve on his initial dinosaur knowledge to see what kind of things he knows. Because as kids, I bet we knew a lot more, but we've probably forgotten a lot since then.
Oh, man. I remember in fourth grade, I had to put together what my teacher called the Dino-rama. And we had to make like a little box thing with a scene with dinosaurs in it.
That's a cute name though, Dino-rama instead of Diorama.
Yeah, and then we had to do these flashcard things. That was bullshit.
Any actual work is bullshit.
Yeah. I like putting the clay in the thing and making fake trees and putting dinosaurs in the clay, but then having to write down all these different dinosaurs names is bullshit.
We're creative folk. We don't want to do real work.
Oh man, do you remember how much real work we got out of in high school because we did movies?
Exactly.
So in high school, every teacher would be like, all right, so you have to make a poster and you have to put together an interactive something. And German and I would always just go up and go, could we make it like a 5-minute video presentation? And the teacher was always so glad that some kid wanted to do something different.
Yeah, because they're probably so bored with their own assignments.
Well, and any kid that wants to show that kind of initiative. And so they almost always would say yes. And so Jarman and I made at least 20 movies over the course of high school, realistically.
We were popular for it.
The teachers were. They did. and because of that, we got out of writing papers sometimes and turning in things because we just made a video. It was so good.
Oh, and I just thought of something. You were talking about bulldog ants earlier.
Uh-huh.
There's a video out there of Steve doing a nature documentary style narration over a video of us watching ants crossing a sidewalk. So we'll have to embarrass him and play that audio sometime on the show.
Oh God.
It's him doing his worst bastard Australian accent.
Oh, it's so good. I think it was me trying to do Steve Irwin at the time. Exactly. I think that was what it was driving at.
At least it's better than your average accent nowadays, which is just the Cockney, whatever.
And it's your chairman and governor, choo-choo. And that was Polish.
Once again, to our European, our UK listeners, we apologize. All right. So here is going to be some dinosaurs trivia.
Dinosaurs.
All right. So what dinosaur name means fast thief?
Velociraptor.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And they run about, it doesn't sound a run they are, but they are about 6 feet long, and they're around 85 to 80 million years ago. Just a little while ago. All right, so On the same note, what close relative of the Velociraptor could grow up to 7 meters and weighed almost a ton? I did not know this.
It's not the T-Rex.
No. Nope.
The Carnosaurus?
No, I'm afraid it's the Utah Raptor, which was found in Utah. I didn't know that was a thing. All right, let's do something a little better.
I guess you have to be known for something, Utah.
Exactly, besides the Mormons.
Utah, we're a state.
There's nothing here. It's beautiful. All right. What was the first dinosaur to be discovered? That's an interesting one.
A brontosaurus, or they thought it was a brontosaurus?
No. Oh. It was the megalosaurus.
Oh, so yes, it was a brontosaurus, which has since been named the megalosaurus because they realized the brontosaurus wasn't a thing.
Why can't they just call it a brontosaurus, though? If they're naming it, so why don't they just say, yeah, it's a brontosaurus?
Well, no, because here's the thing. They named a brontosaurus, and then they found a megalosaurus, and they named that, and then they realized that the brontosaurus was just a juvenile skeleton of that big one. And so because of that, the brontosaurus didn't exist. They had to go with the actual name.
Are you sure? Because this one's saying it's a large meat eater that stood 30 feet tall. This is a different one, I think.
Oh. That shows the ineptitude of dinosaur knowledge.
But no, I think you're right, because they said the Triceratops doesn't exist anymore either, right? Like that was a faulty bone they found or something.
Yeah.
I love the Triceratops.
We've been living a lie, everyone. That's
the boss in Dinosaurs, the TV show, was a Triceratops.
Yeah, and one of my favorite Power Ranger.
Go, go, Power Rangers! Go, Power Rangers! Okay. Wow, 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 wow. Beautiful.
Find me some teens.
Oh, here we go. On the same page here. What dinosaur was, for many years, mistakenly called a brontosaurus?
Oh, I don't know. A brachiosaurus?
Nope, it was a patosaurus.
Oh, so that was the thing I was talking about. That was the thing you were talking about.
You're good. You're on the right track there. All right, so what dinosaur fossil was originally mistaken for a type of bison?
Something smaller. An iguanodon?
Is that a thing?
It is.
Wow. This is saying the Triceratops, but I'm now noticing that this website is from 2004. Well, so this may not be accurate anymore.
So all those points I missed before, those are wiped out. That slate's wiped clean now.
Oh, no, no. You're testing your 2004 dinosaur trivia.
Well, I guess that is the last time I would have actually paid any attention to actual dinosaurs. So that makes perfect sense.
Oh, wow. Okay. How long, if you had to guess, this would be the last one. How long were the average size of... I'm going to rephrase that. Still laughing. How long were the arms of an average Tyrannosaurus Rex?
3 feet.
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah,
one
I knew
meter,
something.
3 feet.
Yep. Yeah, approximately. I'll take
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Perfect. So you actually got... How many did you get right there?
One.
Two.
A Velociraptor.
Yeah, two. You got two right. Out of five.
Well... Believe me, it'll be much better when we talk about dinosaurs this show.
God, why isn't your 2004 dinosaur trivia more up to par? I'm so confused.
I don't know. I'm disappointed in myself.
And they also recently found a couple of they've found the biggest dinosaurs ever found recently, which is kind of cool. Like about 3 weeks ago. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah, they found the largest dinosaur ever found recently, and because of the bone sizes and the way the bones are striated or something, they can tell it's a juvenile as well. So if they were finding an adult version of that, it would still be then the largest dinosaur ever found. So, very interesting.
Crazy. They
look kind of like the brontosaurus type look.
Okay.
But anyways, on to our feature segment.
We'll be right back.
I'm home.
Yeah, so this week we were going to talk about a show that is near and dear to my heart, a show that was able to stand the test of time, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's set in this sort of fake reality, it's timeless. And because it talks about issues that always keep coming up, it's almost always current.
Yeah, surprisingly so.
Yeah, it's amazing. So for those of you who have been living in a cave, Dinosaurs is a show that's basically a basic TV sitcom, but with giant people in dinosaur costumes.
Made by the Jim Henson Studios.
Yep. And it was actually after Jim Henson Studios worked on the Ninja Turtles that they finally had the tech they needed to put together the costumes for it.
That's right. And it was 1991 to 1994.
Yep. And though some episodes are weird, most of them are great, and some of them are just absolutely brilliant commentary.
And you might recognize some of the actors and actresses on there. The only one I really recognized straight off the bat was Jessica Walter, who is of Arrested Development fame and Archer. She's pretty awesome, but she plays the mother in the show. But the other actors, not so familiar to me.
The one thing that that Ann and I love about the show is that Jessica Walter in both Archer and in Arrested Development plays such an abusive, mean, not caring yes, mom. And true. In this show, you get to see the flip of that. And that is great.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart Pankin, you would recognize from a lot of things, but nothing huge. I'm trying to see who else is in the show.
So he wasn't just a voice actor?
He was. He was just the voice actor. But look at Stuart Pankin. You'll recognize him.
What's up saying? He wasn't just a voice actor.
He was. He was just a voice actor. Every dinosaur was three performers.
No, I meant in general in his career, he wasn't just a voice actor. That's what I meant.
No.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh. I thought you mean he was just a voice. Like, yeah, he was just a voice on the show, yes.
I mean, he looks vaguely familiar, yeah. But he's been like on tons of TV shows, apparently, so.
Sally Struthers.
When she wasn't feeding children in Africa, she was on this show.
Plays the voice of the daughter, Charlene. And then, of course, Kevin Clash of recent infamy, but the voice of Elmo.
Oh, right.
Does voices throughout the show. And then most of the others are Muppeteers. So people I know from things and have worked on many, many projects, but that's about it.
Gotcha. Very talented people, of course.
Oh, and Sherman Helmsley plays B.P. Richfield. That's the other big notoriety.
From the Jeffersons.
Yeah, from the Jeffersons. Right. He's B.P. Richfield, the mean, crazy boss. I never recognized that voice. So yeah, it's some great, great performers. As I was saying before, every one of them is three different performances happening. There's the physicality, which in the case of Earl was done by a longtime Muppet performer, Bill Beretta. Then there was the face and animatronic work of working the mouth, which they developed the tech for. And that, I believe, for Earl was done by David Goles, who plays Gonzo, as everyone knows him. And then the voice actor, who came in after the fact and synced up the voice, Stuart Pankin.
That's what I was going to ask. Are you sure it wasn't voice first? Because how would they match it up so well?
I'm not sure about that process. It would either have to be he would record it and then Dave Goles would listen to it and play to it. Or they just did a really good syncing job, which I know they had. If you watch the show, there are times that you realize they had to do that.
Yeah, probably like after the fact. Because I was thinking it probably would have made sense that the actors would record the voiceovers and then they'd be able to kind of work their performance and their facial movements off of how the voices sound.
Now that you're saying that, that's more likely. But there are goofy times in the show where like stuff doesn't quite, you can see it happen.
Oh, yeah. And they probably had to go back and match up. Record fixes and stuff like that. Like, oh, we couldn't move his mouth that way at that particular time. Can you re-record this sentence or something?
Yeah.
That makes sense. But just so I wrote that down in my notes. It's like how complicated that would be to make that all work together at one time. Like, I can't even imagine. That's crazy.
Yeah. And and so when you have four of them in one scene together, you're talking about like six, 16 performers plus extra stuff. Like, it's just insane. But so I went ahead and I found some Trek connections. For dinosaurs. And there are some great ones, and I think you're really going to be excited. Michael Dorn, who plays Worf.
I protest. I am not a merry man.
Mm-hmm. Did voices for multiple episodes.
Awesome.
Mostly as he shows up as Chief Elder once or twice, or the head of a company at one point.
But anytime they kind of need a voice like this, you know,
very low deep voice, yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. David Warner, who's been in a ton of stuff if you look him up, but I'm mostly known from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Ironically.
Is in Star Trek Next Generation 2 episodes, Chain of Command. He plays a Cardassian.
Star Trek 5, I believe, as well.
Oh, I didn't catch that, but cool.
He plays himself. Or not himself, but he plays a human in that one. Okay.
And then Susie Plaxen, who does the voice of Monica DeVertebrae, who I don't think was in... She might have been in one of the episodes we watched.
Is she the brontosaurus?
She's a long neck. Yeah, the one four-legger. Yeah, she must have been. Yeah.
She was in the food episode.
There are three episodes where they're sort of anti-four-legger, and I always get them confused. and she is one of Worf's love interests and a reoccurring character at one point.
She plays a half Klingon. And I think she only has a kid with. I can't remember, but
I don't know.
Yep. She also plays a Cardassian at some point as well.
Yeah.
So that's their saying is like no one ever knows. She plays a sexy Klingon, but then she takes her makeup off. You're like, she's all right, but she's a sexier Klingon.
But that's why she just did a voice for this show. There you go. So some Star Trek connections I went out and found for you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I brought you Bigfoot. You brought me Star Trek.
So some cool sort of facts about dinosaurs. There are only realistically a dozen puppets because they're huge and expensive and hard to maintain. And so there's the main family, and then there are about 8 or 9 others that are called unisaurs, which are sort of generic dinosaurs that they can dress up. So they can make them female or male and fill in scenes with them. And they show up over and over and over again. It's the dinosaur version of a whatnot.
A whatnot?
Oh. Well, now I get to... whatnot is when... During the Muppet Show, you'll see that, you've got the main characters. The characters you recognize, Kermit, Piggy, all them. And then almost a ton of other characters are just these bear puppets. And they use them a ton. And they used to use them a ton in Sesame Street. That are just heads with no eyes and no face, and then they have variable eyes they can put on them and variable mouths and variable noses. Okay.
That makes sense.
And wigs, and so they can make them male or female or dress them for really anything. And so the unisaurs are their equivalent in dinosaurs.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing them in some of the crowd scenes and stuff like that in the episodes last night.
And, it's a show that covered so many topics. Endangered species. One of my other favorite episodes is called The Last Two Grapes.
And the rare creatures they want to eat.
they're called grab delights. and it's just a great episode about, us actively putting things extinct. There's an episode where Robbie wants to eat vegetables. And throughout the episode, it's likened to homosexuality, communism, and drug abuse.
That is the disturbing part. Like, you see this very mild-mannered mother figure in Fran, and she goes out to a romantic dinner with Earl, right? Yeah. And the dinner is like a thing that's alive and talking to her on her plate. And so that's kind of disturbing.
I love it. There's a great episode on steroids.
Jeez.
Where Robbie bulks out, and it's just, and mind you, a lot of real, that was at the time where steroids were still a big kind of scary thing. And there's been a lot of research now. It's just like, nah, it's not really what happens, but it's still a good episode. There's one about masturbation. It's great.
Yeah, watching this show, I'm like, most of these jokes I would never get when I was a kid.
No, like, but the show moved enough as a kid that I remember just loving it. And you love the baby as a kid. That was your connection. Yep.
Love the baby, and you just love looking at the visuals and just look so real and so cool.
And there's a lot about that's the one thing I realized. I just rewatched a bunch of episodes of Dinosaurs. Is that you watch a lot of TV while you're watching dinosaurs.
Yes. They're constantly cutting to the TV.
And some of the stuff that's on there, the news, the anchor whose name is Howard Hand Up Me.
I laughed out loud when I saw that.
It's so good. One of my other favorites is they do this a lot. Captain Action figure, who's a reoccurring character. And Fran at one point is like, man, when is this commercial going to end? And it's the, and that's just the show. Is like, and anytime it capture, they show Captain Action figure, it flashes across the screen. Tell mommy, I want that.
Like, it's that's just basically what those commercials are for.
So yeah, just some sort of fun facts about it. So this week I picked, I guess three episodes total, realistically.
Yeah.
One two-parter and then one that's just my favorite, that I think really exemplify what Dinosaurs was about. The first one that we'll talk about is When Good Food Goes Bad. It is from season one. And to this day, it is my favorite Halloween episode of anything ever.
Halloween?
Yeah. I remember watching it on Halloween.
Oh, okay. I'm saying it's not really a Halloween-based episode.
No, but it's scary.
Gotcha.
It's the closest thing to like a horror episode they ever got to.
It's actually just When Food Goes Bad.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez, let me know your favorite Halloween episode of Dinosaurs' proper name. Gosh.
It's so good. Get over it. I've seen it more times than I can count. And in this episode, well, why don't you give a synopsis of the episode?
Sure.
I know it well.
as long as they weren't two separate episodes, but I watched When Food Goes Bad. Basically, Charlene, the daughter of the family, wants to prove that she can take more responsibility on because, what's the boy's name?
Robbie.
Because Robbie does chores, he does the grass, and he gets money, but also the father's kind of chauvinistic, so he just likes giving his son money because his son can go off and flirt with girls. And meanwhile, Charlene's pissed off. She's like, why does he get money? I don't get anything. So she tries to prove that she can babysit, and she makes a deal with Robbie so that he can go off and hang out with the girls, that she can stay home and watch the kid, and he'll give her the money or half the money or something like that.
Yeah.
So the parents go off on their romantic date to a nice restaurant. And meanwhile, she horrifically ties the baby down to the high chair.
If you look at the reality of the situation, it's pretty dire.
It is pretty horrible. And then she goes off and chats with her friend on the phone for a while. But before this all happened, of course, the baby is teething. So it's got really in pain and it needs this like...
Num gum,
basically numbing solution so it can actually eat food. But of course, she's not thinking about that. Charlene's just off on the phone and things go wrong from there. Why don't you take it from there?
So the baby knocks out of his high chair and escapes. Mm-hmm. Then the fridge talks to him. A little thing slides open. You see an eye and they convince him that they're going to give him sugar and candy and cakes if he opens the fridge. So he goes over and opens the fridge and okay. an army of food comes out.
Basically gremlins, basically.
Yeah, essentially gremlins. And they take over the house and they tie up Charlene and they're led by Chow.
You may know me as Chow the Delicious.
But I'm really Chow the Devious. Or was it Devious or something?
I don't know.
Something like that.
And my dear Cabby.
He holds a cabbage that is his best friend. For some reason.
Yeah, and his other hand is replaced by a fork. It's brilliant.
And he has an eye patch set in the form of a cracker.
So, Charlene, we meet again.
We do?
Don't play the fool with me. Oh. In the Christmas section, huh? They call me Chow. Chow? The Merciless. Ah. But you know me as Chow the Delicious.
That was your hand? Oh, you're from the refrigerator, am I right?
How astute! I trust my cabbage needs no introduction.
No. Of course not.
We are the survivors of your family's incessant eating.
I'm trying to cut down. Hey, I only ate.
Do you know what it's like in there? I spent 4 months in the cheese bin. Ooh. Crouched behind a wedge of Gouda. Ugh. Never knowing when the refrigerator light would come on.
Light. You're spoiled. You've gone rotten.
Silence! We have your baby brother.
What?
Unless you do what we say, you'll never see him again. What do you think of that?
You're just food. I eat guys like you for lunch.
Do not toy with me, Charlene. We are desperate and ruthless and know not the meaning of fear.
So they tie up Charlene. They capture the baby. Robbie comes home early. They capture him. And then they put together this great list of demands that I love. That my favorite line is, we want 40 million helicopters and a dollar. Sorry. $40 million and a helicopter.
And we want our own cartoon show with distribution rights. Like, what?
And we want tracksuits. Nice. Matching.
So, Charlene, how does it feel to be on the other side of the foot?
Ow! You'll never get away with this, you rancid, half-eaten piece of...
Silence! Now, if you wish to see your baby brother alive again, you must satisfy the following demands. First, we want jogging outfits.
Yeah.
No cheap knockoffs.
Designer names.
Second, a comprehensive dental plan.
No deductible. We want to pick our own doctor.
Yes. And third, we want 40 million helicopters and a dollar.
Huh?
What?
Oh, thank you.
I stand corrected. $40 million and a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, we want our own Saturday morning cartoon show.
With full creative control.
So, those are our demands. Will you meet them?
And so, they say they can't, you know, they release them, and then Charlene really obviously tricks the main one into pinching the baby's cheeks. And remember, the baby is gumming. And the baby knocks them all out and makes them afraid, and he forces them to clean up the house, and it's all beautiful and spotless before mom and dad get home.
Absolutely. And they're like, and then Robbie has to admit that she helped babysit. So
yeah, that he got sick. That was his excuse.
Yep. From bad food.
No more food.
And then she gets $5. Woo.
Yes, she does. It's just, it's a great example of just the fun episodes they could have that didn't have to be commentary, but were still just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, that's why I think it was good episodes to choose, because the Nuts to War was like more serious and definitely more actual commentary on real life, whereas this one was just plain old fun.
What is Chow Delicious's line as he goes back in? Food never dies. It only goes bad. Like, it's just...
Accurate.
So one thing as we transition between the episodes, I want to point out, and I hope you noticed, the mother, her costume and her puppet changes drastically between season one and season two.
I did not notice that, although I watched the Nuts to War first from season two and then watched this one.
Okay, so her head is so, like, she is a different, it's a whole different puppet.
Really?
I look at it, and there must have been some sort of fundamental design flaw in the original mother puppet that they had to do a complete redesign.
Oh, look, yeah, the neck color is like yellowish, and then when
it's different, and the face is much more expressive on the new one, and her lines aren't as hard, and like the ridges over her eyes aren't as
thinner,
big.
Thinner face.
Yeah, it was a complete redesign because there must have been something wrong. See. These are the things Steve notices. So the second episode is, I think, the only two-parter they ever did. It's called Nuts to War, and it's really about our involvement in Middle East, probably.
Gulf War, any war,
Gulf
basically.
Gulf War, yeah, any, like, we've mostly been over in the Middle East for the last whatever.
And it's not a two-parter, it's an epic miniseries.
Yeah, it is. It is. But basically, the gist is, one day they're watching TV, and Earl realizes they're out of pistachios, and Fran says, there are no more pistachios, and I love his little speech. He goes, now, Fran, are you to tell me that for some mysterious reason, there are no pistachios to be found anywhere? And the TV bulletin comes on, it says, mysterious pistachio disappearance explained.
Immediately.
Yeah, just immediately. But the four-leggers who live on the other side of the swamp control the pistachio trees, and they want to raise the price, and they're going to have to raise the price of pistachios, and so they go to war over nuts.
But it's not called war initially. It's just they say they're making a campaign called We Are Right.
Yeah, we are right.
Can we shorten that? We have to write this a lot. Like, could we call it WAR? How would you say that? Where?
Where?
War? War.
And so the boys end up getting recruited or enlist, and they go off, and the idea is that they're going to go down to the swamp and spit and hiss at the four-leggers.
Yeah, that's all they need to do. That's all they have to do.
And then there's rumors that the next day they're going to start throwing sticks.
You can't throw sticks. You could put somebody's eye out.
And so Robbie's off on the front, and Fran tells Earl to go get her son back. And the only way he can go is for him and Roy, his best friend, to dress up like USO girls and go perform and find Robbie.
And this episode really cemented for me that Roy is my favorite character.
Oh, Roy Hess is great.
He's hilarious.
Another cool thing about dinosaurs, all of the characters' last names are the names of oil companies.
Very appropriately, because that's what they'll become later on. Yep.
Exactly. Also, the high school that they go to is the Bob LeBray High School, as in the La Brea Tar Pits.
Nice.
It's great. And they go and they find him, and through some sort of weird circumstance where their general loses both eyes to sticks, Robbie ends up in charge and leads the charge, and Earl is forced to go home without him. And then on the news, they accidentally read that a boy was killed.
Before you go on too much farther, the sergeant that lost both of his eyes had one of my favorite comments. It was really off the cuff, really fast. Like, you could barely catch it. Oh, yeah,
right at the end. Right as the exit. He says,
don't abuse your power unless it really gets you off. And then he walks away. I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. He just said that.
Another stick with my name on it. What are the chances of that?
But don't abuse your power unless it gets you off.
Unless it gets you off.
So weird.
And so the family is worried, and finally Robbie comes home.
Mm-hmm.
And they're relieved that he wasn't the one that died. But he, and this is sort of a nod to Gulf War Syndrome, that, you know, he's like, we could have won it. You know, we're going to go back over there, and we're going to, and they're like, no, Robbie, a boy died.
Welcome home, son.
Thanks, Dad.
I'm so happy you're all right.
Yeah.
No, I'm fine, really.
Oh, I heard that someone got killed.
Yeah, it was some new guy. You know, we could have won.
What?
Robbie, what are you saying?
Well, I mean, it was terrible that guy got killed and all. But we had those four-leggers on the run. We could have won it.
Yeah. A boy died. It wasn't worth it. The fighting didn't solve anything. Don't you see that?
Come on, Robbie. Let's get you out of that uniform. You've got school tomorrow.
Forget school. Huh? A bunch of the guys are talking about keeping the army together. They'd have drills, set up a base at the swamp, so we'll be ready for them next time. They're working on a whole new line of weapons. Yeah.
Stop it. Huh? You're not a soldier. You're a kid. You're going to go to school. You're going to take girlfriends to dances. You're going to drive me crazy like you always do. You're going to lead a normal kid's life. Until it's time for you to grow up.
Dad?
It's okay, son. It's over. You're home.
Yeah, it's quite a serious moment.
It really is. And the thing that always touched me about it is that all it took was one boy.
Yeah. One person die, that's all you need.
And that is enough to say no more.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't take hundreds of thousands. One boy is enough. And that always, that even as a kid, I remember that really hitting me.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen that as a kid. I don't remember that particular episode. But there's like, and also like their the commentary about guns in general, they didn't say this, but they show like a promotional commercial saying how pistachios will lead to almonds and almonds will lead to cashews. And like it shows these.
Cashews will lead to the fall of your chosen form of government.
But the very last domino in the picture, which he doesn't actually say, says the right to bear semi-automatic weapons. And so like they just shove that in there at the last minute, and you can barely see the last domino says that on there. And it's like, that's still relevant today. People are like, are clamoring for the right to bear semi-automatic weapons, and it's completely unnecessary. So yeah. I thought that was really, that was quite adventurous of them to say
and
then, that.
And they also even go into corporate benefit for more.
Oh yeah.
In that the We Say So Corporation is the supplier of the war. And then BP Richfield reveals that they're going to supply weapons to both sides and make a killing.
And the weapons that happen to be sticks and stones.
It was, oh yeah, the Annihilator 5000 or something. And it's just a huge rock, you know, and they even touch on that. And that's amazing.
Oh, and that's the other thing that was great when they're watching the leader. What's the elder? Is that what he was called?
Yeah. The chief elder.
And, he was talking about the war and how, you know, it's going to be a great effort. And then one of them says, wow, what a great leader. And then Roy says, yeah, what a great distraction from complicated domestic issues. I was like, that is not a kid's joke.
No, it was hilarious. It's so good.
Because that's still relevant today, too. It's like, oh, what a great distraction from complicated domestic issues.
You know, and they touch on that the people in war are kids. You know, mm-hmm. Obviously, Robbie and Spike being enlisted. But then even at the USO show, you know, Earl goes down and say, hey, soldier, you got a girl waiting at home? And he goes, yeah, my mom.
Oh.
You know, those subtle things.
It's funny and depressing at the same time.
But now you go, oh.
Ooh.
And that is one of my favorite parts of the episode. And it's the silliest part is when they're the USO girls.
And which leads to another not kids joke is when Charlene gets backstage after the show. She's loving. She's like, I found my calling. You know, I'm no longer winding my way through life. She says, I was born to give pleasure to whole groups of boys.
The whole groups of boys.
I was like, oh my God, that is not a kids joke.
Oh man.
Her father's just like, no, 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 no.
And then the general comes over and tries to pick up Earl, and then he pushes him off on Roy and basically insinuates that Roy's gonna put out.
And Roy looks like he was.
Hey, pally boy.
You say you got stockings? That's great. Oh, we should mention also, these episodes are all on Netflix if you're in the US. I'm not sure about the UK, but
yeah, check it out.
Yeah, they're available on Netflix, so check it out.
But it's I remember as a kid, it's striking me, and now it hits me harder and in a different way. And there are very few shows that have done that in my life.
Yeah, and I just, it's a totally different experience watching as an adult. I mean, there's so much there for you to enjoy.
I would encourage you watching a lot of it.
Yeah, I might just do that.
Because if you liked those subtle little funny things, it's every episode is about something like that.
I was actually up like kind of an overnight schedule last night, and I was watching these episodes probably around 7 o'clock in the morning. I get a knock on the door, and it's a repair guy coming to the house, the new place I moved into. And he saw looking in the living room that there was a beer on the table and dinosaurs was frozen on the screen. And I was like, yeah, I work overnight, so that's why I'm, you know, drinking a beer. I'm going to sleep soon. He's like, we all got to unwind somehow. He looks so confused.
See, my hope is that he thought you were masturbating to dinosaurs. Like that's what I hope he walked away with.
That would make his we all got to unwind somehow even more weird.
Oh, yeah. And then the one thing that I haven't talked about from the episode is the subplot of the episode, which is the baby and the cookie monster.
Yes. That was fun.
It's fun to watch. Basically, the baby gets a cookie and this little, basically a rat, comes out and grabs it from him, runs into the wall, and he spends the rest of the episode basically doing Wile E. Coyote bits to try to get the creature.
And at the very end, it really reminds me of the Gizmo Rambo scenes.
Oh, yeah, where he quips up and he's got crayons in his bandolier.
Exactly.
And he's got the meat cleaver and he's got, you know, a head thing on. He's ready and he crawls under the thing and goes in to supposedly kill this thing. And he gets in and he finds that the creature is giving it to its young.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't want it. And he doesn't want it anymore.
Eat the cookie.
You know, and that commentary that everyone is just trying to live.
Also, this really shows me that Seth MacFarlane definitely had to have watched Dinosaurs, because
this, oh yeah,
even though the baby isn't speaking full language, it does often say things that are more intelligent for a baby to say, and it's off doing things on its own that the mom doesn't know about, you know, and so it reminds me a lot of Stewie.
Yeah. And no talk about dinosaurs, and I know that you didn't watch this, but I would encourage you to. Could be talked about without the saddest finale to a show ever.
Oh.
So the We Say So Corporation builds a wax fruit factory over this nesting ground for these beetles. And so these beetles don't eat these vines, and these vines start overgrowing the earth. So that's the setup.
Mm-hmm.
Earl is commissioned with finding a way to take care of the weeds. And so they release basically like an anti-plant agent that kills everything. And so now We Say So, it's so crazy. The We Say So Corporation, to try to bring the plants back, proposes that they drop bombs into volcanoes to create clouds to create rain.
That's going to work well.
And they do this, which leads to a nuclear winter, and it ends with the family sitting in the living room, and the baby, you know, it's cold out, and they're shivering, and the baby says, "Are we going to be okay?" And I think someone basically says, "The important thing is that we'll be together."
Jeez.
and it pulls out through the window, out past the ash that's falling, and that's the end.
That's quite depressing.
Yeah.
The end of the dinosaurs.
The end of the dinosaurs. And it's just, it's a beautiful commentary on what will eventually become a man if we keep doing shit this way.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't watch that one.
You should. It is great. Don't get me wrong. It's a great episode, but it is one of the saddest series finales ever.
Man.
Well, let's end on a high note.
That's like one of your old news stories.
Yeah.
And they all died.
Womp, womp.
Well, no, we won't end on that. I'll end on a little bit more trivia. Earl Sinclair was originally supposed to, the first person they approached was James Belushi.
Which I could totally see working out. He basically played that character on a future sitcom anyway.
Yeah. But at the time, he wanted to focus on his film career, so he turned it down.
Which went so well, if you've seen Red Heat. I mean, best movie ever.
K-9 was the shit. Though Turner and Hooch was better.
Wait, this wonderful Red Heat quote here from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, I'm excited now.
I do not want to touch his ass. I want to make him talk.
What a great movie. Anyway.
So now we're going to move on to our second bit, which is also dinosaur themed, a quick and fun factoid fumbles. So in factoid fumbles, I name some things and Jarman has to tell me at least one fact about them. It doesn't have to necessarily be true. It doesn't necessarily have to be accurate. At the least, it just has to make me chuckle.
No pressure.
So in this special dinosaurs edition, I'm going to be asking Jarman about dinosaurs.
Go figure.
All right. So Jarman, tell me one thing you know about the Stegosaurus.
The Stegosaurus was the first being that had a need for a chiropractor because its bones are all on the outside. So
that's true.
It actually works really well with the Tyrannosaurus Rex because he has his little small arms. If he leans over the Stegosaurus just right, he can crack its back with his little tiny arms.
But that's a little known thing they had going on in nature. They helped each other out.
That's also how the Tyrannosaurus Rex became extinct, because the Tyrannosaurus Rex's wife came over and saw him leaned over the Stegosaurus cracking its back, and he thought they were having sex. So she killed him.
She killed him.
Yeah.
That's totally not where I thought you were going with that, but that was exciting anyway.
It's a fact.
The Triceratops.
The Triceratops, is not real, apparently.
It's okay.
It was in 2004.
Neither are ghosts.
I still don't remember how they proved that the Triceratops was not real, but apparently it's imaginary.
Yeah. Okay. The Iguanodon.
The Iguanodon, no one told him that he wasn't really a dinosaur. Like, it's like, you see, like, the camera panning up an iguana, and then you realize that's just a camera effect. He's really actually a tiny iguana, and he's standing next to a big triceratops, and he's like...
Oh, like the way they did movies in the 30s. Exactly. They would just put lizards really close to the character with foreground objects.
But, like, he left his in his will, is the last Iguanodon. It was actually just an iguana. He's like, please remember me as one of the dinosaurs, because that will leave my legacy where I want it to be. And so they found that next to his bones. They're like, oh, shit, he really wanted to be a dinosaur, so we'll just call him an Iguanodon. There you go.
Okay.
So that's what happened.
All right, good. Well, I learned something.
Absolutely.
The duck-billed dinosaur.
That's a thing.
Yes. that answer was somehow correct.
Not unlike the platypus. If there is a god, it's one of those creatures where he's just like, oh, shit, I wasn't paying attention. I guess I'll put that down on the earth somewhere, because he screwed up.
It's like, I ran out of ideas. I'll just put a bill
on
it.
Or these parts left. Part of a duck, part of a... I'll shove them together, make it a creature. Yeah. I don't know.
Correct. The brontosaurus.
Also not real. What are you giving these fake dinosaurs for here? This was bullshit. That's
two votes for ghosts also aren't real.
No. But I bet I more believe in a ghost of a brontosaurus than an actual brontosaurus.
I would love to see a ghost of a brontosaurus.
That's actually a big argument. They're like, why are there no ghosts of dinosaurs?
That's true. Ghosts aren't real. All right, the Velociraptor.
The Velociraptors were the first hipsters. I don't know why, but they were. That was the worst one yet.
They were the killers before they were cool. Bam.
There's a great meme out there of like hipster Velociraptors. It actually is out there. It's pretty funny. They have like mustaches and weird hipster glasses and stuff.
The T-Rex.
The T-Rex never was actually, people didn't know this, but he was actually a vegetarian and herbivore. And so he was just born looking intimidating, you know, and he's stomping after you with his big hind feet and they're like, he wanted to play, but everyone thought he was coming to eat them. So they would run away and, you know, they would talk about him behind his back saying, oh, he's so scary. He's killing all of us. But he just wanted to play and he loves to eat plants and he wanted to hang out with his imaginary brontosaurus friend, but he couldn't.
And I also heard surprisingly good with a yo-yo.
Surprisingly good, yes.
Well, those little hands, you got to have control of something.
Well, you also cracked the backs of stegosauruses.
That's true. Did. Until his wife caught him.
And then they killed him. The tragic end of the Triceratops ranks.
All right. This is the last one.
Okay.
Pachycephalosaurus. And you'll note because it's the dinosaur with that dome thick skull that it used to ram things.
Well, this is
just gave you a fact about it, so that's...
Well, it was a great dinosaur. I mean, it was very interesting and different looking. You know, it was the pearl of the time. You know, everyone talked about him because he was so different.
The bell of the ball, so to speak.
The sad part is, once he was discovered, its bones, the doctorate student who was discovered it, they asked her, they're like, hey, you get to name this dinosaur now. And what they didn't realize is that she was having a seizure. They thought she was actually naming it. And it came out, what was the name again?
Pachycephalosaurus.
Exactly. So they didn't realize she was having a seizure because she's epileptic. But that's the name now. It's the name forever for that dinosaur. It's really a shame because it was a beautiful creature.
Yeah. And it's really tough to spell.
Pachycephalosaurus. That's so horrible. We don't mean to be insensitive to you epileptic folk out there, but hey, don't name dinosaurs. That's all.
And you should be proud she discovered a dinosaur.
That's right. Okay, we'll name it that. Jeez, take it easy. So there you go. There's some facts you can take home to the bank.
Put them in your mind vault and lock them down.
There you go.
Oh. All right, trailers.
Yes.
So this is... Oh, go ahead.
Last week we were going to talk about these, but we ran over time. But this week we're probably going to run over time too, but who cares? We're going to talk about these
damn
trailers.
Yeah, what the hell? We can't put them off forever.
Exactly. So the first one we're going to talk about is a movie that's now out, actually, called Tusk. And this is written and, I believe, directed by Kevin Smith. He's, you know, the previous director of Clerks and Dogma and Chasing Amy.
And Clerks 2.
And that movie with J-Lo and Ben Affleck. I don't know what that was.
Geely.
Yes. And apparently this movie came as an idea as he was talking on his podcast with his friend Scott Mosier, who was the blowjob guy in Clerks, if you remember that guy.
Yeah.
But they were just coming up with ideas and they saw this Craigslist ad for somebody saying, you can stay in my apartment for free as long as you wear a walrus suit. And they thought how ridiculous that was. And they said, what if you had a movie about this? And it went on in their conversations. And they said, well, if you guys want us to make a movie about a man turning into a walrus, send us a message on Twitter with hashtag walrus yes. And enough people did it that he's like, well, fuck it. I'm going to make a movie. So he got funding. He got the movie for $3 million. He made this horror movie with Justin Long.
Uh-huh.
Where he's a podcaster and he goes off to interview this strange guy somewhere. And the man actually drugs him and starts actually physically altering him to turn him into a man walrus.
Yep. I think it looks great.
It looks funny.
And earlier reviews are excellent.
There's some really bad reviews too. A lot of the reviews are saying that it's just like all an in-joke from his podcast, basically. But I don't listen to the podcast, but I wouldn't mind watching it.
Oh, well. Who fuck him. It's fan service.
Exactly. It costs $3 million, so who cares?
He's doing good by his people. Shut up.
Exactly. You don't have to watch it.
And I like this because I feel like all the movies we reviewed this week are better versions of something I've already seen.
I could see that.
And I think Tusk is a better version of The Human Centipede.
It doesn't take itself entirely seriously.
Yeah, but it looks like it's still going to be creepy as shit. The guy he has playing the lead, who's the lead villain, I guess, probably.
I have seen him before.
I can't remember his name. It is Michael Parks?
Yes.
Yeah, Michael Parks. Michael Parks is astounding. He's a hidden treasure of an actor. He is in a bunch of the Quentin Tarantino films. He was in Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, played two different characters.
Right. He's Django Unchained, Argo.
And my favorite role of his, and if you haven't seen it with Halloween coming up, it's a great kind of horror film, Red State.
Oh, that's also that is also Kevin Smith.
Yep. Red State is phenomenal.
And that got horrible reviews, too. That was panned.
Everyone can suck it. Red State was great. And the best part, and it's amazing, in the middle of the film, he by himself does what's probably a 10 to 12 minute monologue. He does a sermon in the middle of the movie.
Hmm.
And you don't get lost. Like it is enthralling for like the whole 10 minutes. And it's audacious for any director to just put an actor on the spot for 10 minutes.
Yeah, like, I mean, Quentin Tarantino does that in his movies, too. So I guess you define actors who are good at going for a long time by themselves.
But yeah, and it's brilliant. It is brilliant. I highly recommend Red State if you haven't seen it. I think it's on Netflix. Check it out. It's great.
And he also has, like, a very cool voice and very cool look.
And John Goodman's in it.
Yeah.
And so that's good, too.
So you're just an all-around Kevin Smith fan.
Geely was bad. I don't like Jersey Girl. Clerks 1 and 2, Jane and Silent Bob Strike Back was awful, but I maintain that Clerks 2 is a great and hilarious film.
I liked it. I laughed like hell.
I will defend that film to no end to anyone, because there are just some brilliantly funny moments in it. Real funny moments in it.
And apparently Clerks 3 is on the horizon.
Good. I'm so excited.
And apparently this Tusk movie is going to be a trilogy of movies that are set in Canada. The next one is going to be starring Johnny Depp, apparently. So okay. Johnny Depp is obviously taking deferred payment for this because he just wants to do it for fun. And Johnny Depp's daughter is good friends with Kevin Smith's daughter. And both of them were in the movie as well in a small scene as clerks at a convenience store in Canada. So okay. He's going to make a movie more focused on those two girls, his daughter, Johnny Depp's daughter, and have them interplay off each other, cool. Kind of like in a Clerks fashion. It'll be in the same universe as Tusk.
So what are you going to give? What rating are you going to give Tusk?
I will say get the couch ready because I'm definitely going to watch it. But I will wait probably until it gets to a home viewable way.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a get the couch ready and take a look.
Although I am going to the movies this Friday and we're probably going to do a double feature with the girlfriend. So maybe we'll see it. Who knows?
Okay. Well, yeah. Depends on what else is out.
Exactly.
All right. So Tusk. There it is.
There it is.
The next movie is Open Windows, which German you've seen, right?
I have because I saw an early showing of it at the Miami Film Festival I went to about 4 months ago or something. Yeah.
That is very, very cool. But it looks like this online wormy beta kind of guy who is obsessed with this girl online.
Mm-hmm. An actress.
And an actress who is played by a porn star. and he is suddenly privy to a terrorist. I don't know. Is that accurate? Villain of some sort who's making him watch him hurt this girl who he is in love and obsessed with. And yeah, he's the only one.
And not giving anything away, it all starts off with he was told that he won a trip to like Los Angeles to actually get to interview her and like talk to her because he was okay. The email told him, since we see that you're her biggest online fan, you have the unofficial fan club that you run for her, we want you to come out and get an interview with her. It'd be good publicity for her and good for you. And he gets out there and slowly starts to realize that this not only was that email fake sent from someone who's kind of setting him up in a weird position, but also this person has video feeds everywhere. They have access to her phone, the actress's phone, and they're showing him video of her while she gets kidnapped. And it gets pretty cool. And it's really, really cool effects as far as seeing what he's seeing on the computer screen while watching what he's doing while he's driving. Like, they use very unique camera techniques and stuff like that. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think this is a better version of Disturbia.
Okay,
and
yeah.
That was the phone booth one.
Oh, with Colin Farrell.
Yeah. And that one that Taylor Lautner did.
Also Eagle Eye with Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, I feel like this is the better version of those films.
It's more personal and more more have you on the edge of your seat, for sure. Like, Eagle Eye was cool, big budget kind of movie like this, where there's cameras everywhere. But this one's more like you're just in this guy's head, like you're seeing what he's seeing kind of thing. It's really.
And I also like that the lead female, I don't have to wonder what she looks like naked and having sex.
Because she is a porn star.
Like, I like that mystery doesn't exist.
Her name is Sasha Gray, and she actually did a good job in this movie, actually. So she's surprisingly good for a porn actress. But she's beautiful, too. It's not your typical, you know, Botoxed, scary-looking porn actress. But
yeah, true. So I'm going to give this one a get the couch ready, because I will probably also wait until it comes to a home viewable version.
Very cool. And if I hadn't seen it already, I would have been probably a take a look, because I would have been confused.
Okay.
But since you have my recommendation, you are getting your couch ready, which is great.
Okay.
So the next one, you want to introduce that one, Steve?
Honeymoon. So a young couple goes out to a cabin in the woods, owned by the girl's family, I believe.
Always a good plan.
To have their honeymoon. And they are harassed, and she disappears one night and comes back, and she's different in some way.
Some way, yeah.
And for some reason, they can't leave the cabin alive? I don't know.
It is confusing. Something is wrong with her. She's acting strangely, doing odd things. Something's growing in her at one point. Like, she looks like her veins are coming green or something. Mm-hmm. Something to do with the forest. But the cool thing is that it's the chick from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Have you gotten to her yet in the show?
No, I don't think I have, but I recognized her from something.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not giving anything away, but she's a wildling. She's one of the people beyond the wall who kind of lives out there.
The redhead. Yeah.
Spoilers.
And she shoots Jon Snow. Spoilers!
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
But she's gorgeous. True. And she also gets naked in the show, of course.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, she's beautiful, but playing an American in this version, I think. So it's interesting, but I just have no idea what's going on in this movie yet.
Yeah,
in this trailer.
I'm forced to give it a. We'll see.
I'm giving it the same rating. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. We'll see.
We'll see.
Okay.
I'm glad we went there together.
Of course.
All right. So that's been our show this week. German, do you want to make the announcement?
Sure. So Steve and I discussed it, and we think it would be beneficial for the show and for our free time as well, but also to make better shows each time. We're going to move to a every other week schedule. And I think it'll be more like this as well, where we're not going to be confined to just an hour. We can kind of take a little bit longer with the show. But this way we can really prepare great segments for you and have, you know, just the same level of quality and yet keep that consistent throughout. But it's going to be fun. We'll have great shows
and
every week.
Maybe when our lives become a little less hectic, we can go back to 1 week. But then, you're going to have to hold off.
Exactly.
You're going to have to be patient. Seven listeners.
That's right. And down the line, we might have, you know, more mini shows. Like, I know Patrick, our buddy, wants to come on and do his own video game show. So that'll be added in. So yeah. You'll have those extra content coming in every now and then. So don't worry.
But we still love you.
Yes.
We're not mad.
We're not mad. It's okay. But we're in a great show. What was that?
It's not your fault. Mom and Dad, we both still love you.
Exactly.
But we're moving to Arizona.
We're joining the circus.
Nobody knows it, but Arizona is the circus capital of the world.
It's really weird.
We're leaving you. It's all that flat land. It's easy to set up tents.
We're leaving you here. Sorry.
Something Harry Carey. You juggle.
Hey, we're leaving you. I'm going to the moon.
You got those monkey arms. You'll be fine on the trapeze. You have skills, sweetie.
Dear God, we both need to go to bed.
What are we doing?
So thanks, audience, and we will see you in 2 weeks. And until then, stay nerdy, my friends.
Thanks again, Internet.